Hello, fantasy football fans, and it is Thursday morning here in baseball football fantasy world. I'm your host, Chris Mitchell, and this is the Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show. Glad to have you on board here in week number two of the fantasy season. Wednesday night, Brandon C. Williams and I went over the entire week two slate, game by game, from Thursday all the way through Monday. Hopefully you were listening to that podcast, or hopefully you will be listening to that podcast over the next couple days before the Sunday slate begins. But today, We're gonna address the money issue. We're gonna try to put some money in your pockets, provide you with some opportunities to earn some ducats. And the way that we do that is we have Daily Roto's Ricky Sanders on the program today. This guy has been a monster. Now, I gotta say, I'm a little bit angry. I'm a little bit upset with him. He was so successful during the baseball season, making money not only for himself, because obviously while he's coaching people and giving advice for Daily Roto and from other outlets before he moved up the ladder to now be working at Daily Roto, who is just absolutely killing it when it comes to daily winners. I mean, they got million-dollar winners basically every couple weeks. I mean, it is obnoxious. I remember I was watching a television show the other day where winning the lottery, it would take like 40,000 years of buying like four lottery tickets a day every single day for the rest of your life to win the lottery. Winning the lottery, you win like $150 million. If you subscribe to Daily Roto, you listen to Ricky Sanders, you're not going to absolutely win. I don't want to go crazy, but they've got like $6 million winners over the last like 6 months. That's a pretty decent percentage. And granted, you're not winning $150 or $250 million, but $1 million ain't so bad. I mean, they're killing it over there. It's crazy. And Ricky is doing a phenomenal job when it comes to that. So we're going to talk with him today, bring him into the program, and hopefully help you guys at least win, you know, get in the money. I'm not saying we're going to guarantee you $1 million or anything like that. That would be pretty foolish. But if you listen to what he has to say, you take his advice, maybe just take a lot of his suggestions. Just don't even use your brain. Don't overthink it. I find that a lot, especially in today's America. I'm on social media a lot, so I see a lot of this. Don't use your brain. You're much better off if you listen to someone else. Don't listen to yourself. I'm not saying you're stupid. I'm not saying people on social media are stupid. But let's face it, there are a lot of people out there that are. Ricky Sanders is not one of them. So just do what he says. Ignore your instincts. Don't do what you want to do. Do what he tells you to do. And that's what I'm going to do this weekend, and that's what we're going to talk about today here on the program. Again, I'm Chris Mitchell from RotoX.com. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at CJMitch73. If you want to ask some questions or just talk fantasy sports on Facebook, you can do that as well. I've got a group on there called the Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show. If you want to follow Ricky Sanders, and I highly recommend you do, it's at R Sanders DFS. Let's bring him in right now. Ricky, you went over to Europe, and I got to say, I was jealous not only that you were going, not only that you made all that money in order to be able to afford to go, but I was a little bit pissed that I wasn't invited. Now, granted, you're going with your girlfriend, I believe, or your fiance, I believe it is, but nonetheless, all that success, I get jealous pretty easily, and you know, I wish I was there with you.
Yeah, we actually just got back from Europe, and we have a trip planned next year for China and Asia too. So if you want to add to the jealousy, we've been some world travelers recently. But yeah, I just wanted to touch on what you said is use or skip bitter this weekend. Use Daily Roto, and it was very easy. I'm mad how easy it was that I overlooked it. Is it literally could have been done in three clicks. To do what he did. He grouped a quarterback, wide receiver, and wide receiver from an opposing team together. He chose correctly, and he clicked it, and it was the 22nd optimal lineup, if you just set it up like that, from DailyRoto.com that won $1 million on FanDuel. So, I mean, I made the switch over to Daily Roto because I believe in the product, and that just shows how you really should believe in the product.
Yeah, and I saw Mike Cardano, who's the head of, I don't know his exact title, but he's worked at Roto Experts and he worked at the Fantasy Sports Television Network, and he's kind of the overseer of a variety of the fantastic fantasy products under the kind of the umbrella of the fantasy products. I don't know his exact title, but he tweeted out earlier in the week that I think you guys have like $5 or $6 million winners over the last 6 months or something like that. I mean, that is – I realize that Drew Dickmeyer kind of is the name he won a couple years ago. It was a huge thing for Roto Experts to have their winner win the million-dollar tournament and everything. So he's kind of, I guess, the big name, and he's been very successful in Daily for quite some time. He's basically a legend at this point. But for you guys to be able to, as a team, create that many millionaires, I'm not just kissing ass here. I hate kissing ass. I don't usually do it, as you know. I give you nothing but grief. I never praise you. But that is insane that many people can spend so little money, and yet you can have that many million-dollar winners. It's it's crazy. It sounds like I'm doing an infomercial, but this is just the reality.
Yeah, I think the buy-in was $9.99, so it's less than $10 for this one. But yeah, I think there was one for golf, and all the other ones have been for football, which are really the two main sports that offer it. And they've been in contests where you have to beat a ton of people. I mean, we're talking like hundreds of thousands of people. So the fact that, I mean, all these winners have come from the tools of Daily Roto just shows you how effective they are. They are a bit advanced, but you can go on the website. There are videos that show you how to use them. So, I mean, one 10-minute video and all of a sudden advanced becomes easy, and you'll see just why, you know, these tools are so consistently successful.
And one of the things that the daily fantasy industry was criticized for back when it was sort of unregulated and when there were multiple companies was that one of the ways is that you had all these whales that were experts at this, who did this for a career, that were basically MIT mathematicians. They would put in thousands and thousands of lineups, and that the average Joe couldn't be successful because of they were just getting picked off by these sharks. That's obviously not the case anymore. The industry has been regulated. It's fixed. It's much more fair now, and obviously when you use Daily Roto, the playing field is extremely level. The average Joe can be just as successful as a guy who spends all – just as successful as you.
Yeah, especially because if you use, you know, the tools, you get the insights of those behind the scenes, and you get the projections, and we've done all the work for you to the point where you need to just decide, you know, what team you like, what game stack you like. And you could, you know, connect that to our projections, and you can kind of go customize doing what you feel combined with, you know, what the numbers say. And it's pretty easy to get some unique lineups that have a ton of potential that, you know, we may not have thought of or any other pros may not have thought of. If you just use a little bit of your own brain, you know, combined with all the statistics and stuff that we've compiled already on the back end. So, yeah, like you said, I mean, it's no sure thing anymore that the pros are just the ones, especially in these large field tournaments where there's a degree of volatility, where if you just pick one guy who no one is on, who goes absolutely crazy, I mean, you can beat these guys who, you know, if they're not popping in their algorithms and you use a little bit of your own research, all of a sudden you're ahead of the field.
And before we get to the better picks for week two and some of the overpriced ones, I do want to get some actual names from you. But before that, I want to try to sneak behind the curtain just a little bit. And from your perspective, from your expertise, how you do it, what are you looking for in order to try to target the boomers or the bust for any given week? What are some of the stats you look for or the matchups, or and especially early in the season, not only in general terms? In general terms, how do you sort of look to see who you like and who you don't like? But especially this early in the season, I talked with Brand C. Williams on the program last night, and we were talking mostly stardom, sit-ems, in yearly leagues. But in general, do you look at 2017? Do you look at week 118? I mean, teams are a lot like they were last year, but they're different, and you never know with the motivations. I mean, early season, I look at it as one of the ways that people can really benefit, and this is in the free economic system or whether it's in sports or especially in fantasy sports, is the learning curve. If you're ahead of the curve, you can take advantage and you can definitely get a significant advantage when it comes to things. And early in the season, it seems to me that it's difficult because it's such a complicated sample size to try to make an analysis and a projection about. But at the same time, if you're ahead of the curve, you can be way ahead. How do you go about doing it, and what do you look at this early in the season to try to pick your good plays and to avoid, obviously, the bad ones?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can look at it, but a lot of what we do is based on the market share, meaning the percentage of the team that the player gets. So, for instance, this upcoming week, we have Antonio Brown projected for a slate high 32.1% of the targets for his respective team. And you could kind of just go down the ladder looking at the market share for that, looking at the market share for receptions, looking at the market share for carries, for the rushing touchdowns. I mean, we look at it on a percentage of the overall touches for the team. And there's a lot of numbers early on that you kind of, you know, alluded to that are misleading. I mean, you look at the Washington Redskins last week. They ran, I think it was 73 plays. They dominated time of possession. And I think people are just going to assume that that's the case again this week. But if you, I mean, you could find team pace on Daily Roto. You could find all the market shares I'm talking about. You could find carries. You could find ways to identify some of these outliers, because this week Guess what? They're playing a team that was seventh in time of possession week one. So we take that into consideration with all of our projections as to where, you know, Adrian Peterson touched the ball. He rushed the ball 26 times last week. We kind of take into account that they're probably not going to, you know, do that again this week. So we give him a market share of what an average performance would look like. And we go from there, and all of a sudden he's a guy who doesn't look like a great value this week, who I think people are going to be on. So we don't know everything yet. We've got 1 week of, you know, Pro Football Focus grades. So we think we know how these new, you know, rookie defenders are going to do, rookie offensive players, how they look through 1 week. But there are a lot of misleading things, and we kind of weed that out on Daily Roto. So I think you look for market share if you feel good about a guy's targets. I think obviously you want to go there. You got to look at matchups. I don't want to discount that. But again, through 1 week, there could be some noise, especially with some of the grades. And I mean, you want to look at value in terms of their daily, you know, price. And there are a lot of guys this week who are cheap last week, who we know are going to be chalky. So if you want to be different, you fade the guys who had a monster week one.
And that's what I want to lead to real quickly before we get in into the specific players is James Conner. Everybody was on him on week one. Everyone loved him. And, you know, the argument was, well, D'Angelo Williams was great when Le'Veon didn't play. So James Conner has a very good chance to be great. Everyone loved him. I don't know what his percentage share was in DFS, but I suspect it was pretty high. And obviously he came through. But he had 31 rushes, which is extremely high in today's NFL. And he also had six targets in the passing game. Is he a guy that you're, you know, granted, I expect him to be very highly owned this week again, if not maybe exponentially more than last week. But do you expect him to get, again, 37 touches in or targets in one game, even for the Steelers with Antonio Brown on that team? That, to me, not only stunned me for week one, but I just find it impossible to believe that that's going to continue to happen in weeks two, three, and four. But yet I still expect a lot of people to go that way. Are you on a James Conner or are you off, and what's your rationale?
Yeah, I can't really find a reason not to like him. I don't think we'd project him at 37 touches, but he had 100% of the running back touches in week one. I mean, they truly used him in a Le'Veon Bell type role. And this wasn't unexpected. This is a guy who, in the third week of the preseason, caught 6.5 passes. So the fact that he caught 6 passes here was not surprising. And now his price tag rose. And this is an incredibly concentrated offense. I mean, James Conner played 91.6% of the snaps in week one. The only backs that played more than that, Todd Gurley and Ezekiel Elliott. So he is a true workhorse, and he is not priced as such. And you've got, you know, Big Ben at home without Le'Veon Bell in a spot against a very bad defense. We saw, you know, how the Chargers looked week one. I think it's very difficult to overlook this whole stack. Even if we're talking 25, 30 touches instead of 37, James Conner at 6,700 is a comparable role to all the guys who are almost 9K on DraftKings.
So even though he's priced as something like a top 10 running back, coming off an enormous week where you expect a lot of people to own him, even though those would seem to work against him, you still, he's just so good, you love him anyway?
Yeah, you're not going to find a guy who touches the ball at as high of a rate as he does for that price point. I mean, just looking at it, you've got Leonard Fournette at 6,800 dealing with a knee injury. You've got Kareem Hunt at 6,200. And by comparison, we're talking James Conner. We've got him projected 83% of the rushing touchdown market share, 78% of the rushing market share. That's higher than anyone. Both of those numbers, that's higher than Gurley. That's higher than David Johnson. That's higher than Melvin Gordon. So because he's touching the ball so much on a high-powered offense, yeah, I think I'm just eating it again, and I'm going to differentiate elsewhere.
And how much, you know, if you're in a head-to-head situation or one of us, some type of smaller tournament where you want to just have the best overall lineup, I can understand it. How much do you consider that when you're playing a tournament where you want to be a little bit contrarian? How do you build your roster? Do you build around some certain studs regardless of the ownership share you're expecting, and then maybe you find your contrarian picks elsewhere, or how do you go about doing that? Because I'm assuming you believe that not only you guys are high on him, but there are a lot of people going to. So I expect his ownership to be high, but do you just not care when it comes to him? Maybe you find your contrarian pick somewhere else, or how do you go about building a lineup specifically this week?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to a running back that's going to touch the ball this many times, I think the best argument against or for fading them would be the fact that it's the NFL and they could get hurt. So if you're, you know, mass multi-entering, I mean, of course, you could always fade any player. If he takes to a shot to his knee early in the first half, he's not going to hit value. But when you've got a guy who basically is the role of a 9K running back on a great offense who's going to see a crazy amount of touches, I mean, I think that's a spot where you probably just want to lock in the chalk. I mean, a guy like Tevin Coleman, if he's going to, you know, start this week, there's going to be no Devontae Freeman. There's going to be a huge role for a running back, guaranteed touches for a low price. I think where you can get different is some of the receivers. I mean, if you're talking a cheap receiver, maybe a guy like Galladay, who I do think will get some targets, but a lot of them will be downfield, low percentage, then you can clearly identify a path where he busts. I mean, James Conner, if he's touching the ball 30 times, 28 of them could be terrible, and he could still, you know, dominate in fantasy if he breaks two long ones or scores two touchdowns or whatever. So when I'm trying to be different, there's a difference between, you know, over-smarting and, you know, just flat out making a dumb move. So I think when you get a running back like this, a lot of people are going to look to be contrarian. But again, to me, this is a guy who's in that Le'Veon Bell role, and he's not priced as such. So I think it's just a little too cute for me to not use him.
Yeah, I actually looked over at fantasydraft.com because I used to do some writing for them, as you did as well. So I still check out their site. I still have some money over there. And technically, they have Le'Veon Bell priced higher. Now, granted, he's out, and even if he came back, I can't imagine that you'd value him more than a Todd Gurley. But at least based on their algorithm, Le'Veon Bell is significantly more expensive than James Conner, who, of course, is going to play. So that, I guess, tells you a little bit about sort of what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the price point is it's not crazy, and you could fit studs next to him. And again, that offense is concentrated, which is what you really look for. I mean, anytime there's an offense that's basically built around two players, you know that they're going to get the volume. And like Kansas City was a defense that was torched by the Bears' second team in preseason. I mean, Phillip Rivers was very close to being QB1 last week. Keenan Allen, who had the most difficult individual matchup, he torched them. So this legitimately might be one of the bottom five defenses in the NFL. And you got kind of a crazy, crazy growth for his price.
Yeah, that concentration was actually why I was a little bit I predicted Juju Smith-Schuster as a potential bust for the season in yearly leagues. Not a bust, but as more of a disappointment.
Right.
Just because it's hard to see how he gets so many, you know, how he gets the necessary targets. It's one thing to be efficient, but you still want to see a lot of opportunities in yearly leagues as well as daily. And that was my concern, is that Antonio Brown just gets swamped with opportunities, and so does Le'Veon Bell, or in the case of James Conner. Juju is a fantastic player, but I was a little concerned that the volume just wouldn't be there. And if the volume isn't there, he's got to be extremely efficient. And to me, that's tough to do. That's basically what you're talking about here.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we'll talk about that wide receiver. Is there's a bunch of guys like that who their opportunities came along week one, but if you're trying to be different, I think they're easy avoids in week two of tournaments.
Yeah, let me ask you about that. We'll go on to that next, which is who were some of the surprises from week one, and were you buying or are you selling going forward?
Well, obviously Kenny Galladay playing most of the snaps there for that team. And actually our model likes him a lot this week. I think he's going to be very popular in cash games. And I've loved the talent with him. I thought it was going to happen last year. It didn't. It looks like he could be their number one receiver moving forward. He looks like a fine investment this week. To us, Quincy Enunwa, A, was the shocker, but B, Jermaine Kearse is going to be back this week, which I don't think people are going to take into account as much. And I think Enunwa is a fine play. But if we're talking about, you know, in the short term just for this week, he is not in our top 20 of values at the wide receiver position. So if you're asking me for week two alone, who we're expecting to kind of fall off, like I think Enunwa is going to be a cash game, I don't want to say lock, but I think he's going to be someone who's maybe 30-ish percent owned in cash games because he's very cheap. And there are many other alternatives here, and I think the better way to go would be the Chris Godwin, who performed in week one. And we actually have a bunch of wide receivers in the same price range who are also comparable, who we'll get to. But Godwin, I mean, in his games when DeSean Jackson has been out, and it looks like DeSean Jackson is going to be out with a concussion and a shoulder issue, 5 for 68. Let me preface this. Godwin in his career in games with 40-plus snaps, there's been four of them, 5 for 68, 3 for 98, 7 for 111 and a touchdown, and 3 for 41 and a touchdown.
And you've got Godwin in some of those matchups with Jalen Mills in this one. I think I like him a lot more than I like it in Nunwa if we're talking about guys who are week one studs. And, like, Randall Cobb, clean price range for whatever reason, only 4,600. I mean, you need Aaron Rodgers to be healthy here. But this is a guy who's going to go overlooked. Like, I think if you're going in tournaments, playing Quincy in Nunwa week two is chasing the week one points when you've got all these guys. I mean, we've got Corey Davis as a top six value. All these guys who didn't go nearly as crazy week one, or even in Godwin's case, a guy who did have a big week one. I just think there's way more upside for these guys than a guy who's kind of, you know, coming out of the slot, playing some tight end for a guy like Sam Darnold. So it should be interesting this week. I think the guys who absolutely exploded, even Godwin in week one, will be very heavily owned. And it's pretty easy to pivot because unless you think these are mainstays, and I think Godwin has the most upside here, but there's going to be ways to go over the field if one of those guys fails.
Yeah, you just picked four people off of my article, and I doubt that you actually read it. And so somehow we're thinking along the same lines, which makes me feel good. I was stunned by Inunway. Not as much. I thought the Sam Darnold hype was kind of ridiculous. He looks like he's a nice quarterback. It's a good start to a guy who's a rookie. Expectations should be low, and he exceeded those. So I can understand why people are happy about Sam Darnold. But at the end of the day, the stats, if you were just comparing him to everybody and not factoring in that he's a rookie and the fact that the Jets are usually absolutely miserable, if you ignored all that and just compared him on a fair scale, Darnold was relatively average. But what did strike me was Inunwa was targeted, I think, 10 times, and I think the rest of the offense was targeted like 11 combined. So that definitely struck me. I liked him as a waiver wire guy, but I agree. I actually like Robbie Anderson better in yearly leagues. I'm not saying this week specifically for DFS, but in yearly leagues, I've been on Robbie Anderson as a value. But to see Inunwa with that many targets, it makes you think that there's a rapport there, and you know it's easy to feel good about it. Whether that actually ends up in being production is another story, but to 10 targets in the first game for a rookie, that definitely caught my eye, to say the least.
Yeah, it's just a matter of, is he going to go for the score this week? Because he's clearly going to be someone who's targeted in the short field, but if you're trying to win $1 million, I mean, 5 for 50 is not going to get it done for you. Even, you know, 7 for 60, it's fine for a cheap receiver, but you need the touchdowns if you're trying to win $1 million. So the point I was trying to make is, I think he's a solid value for yearly leagues. I think he is going to be heavily targeted in that West Coast offense. I think he's a good fit. The question is, does he have the necessary upside this week? And I think a lot of people are just going to lock him in because they saw what he did last week. And I don't know if he's the kind of guy who, on consistent weeks, is going to win you $1 million. He might win your cash games, but if we're talking tournament plays, I'm going to be way under, maybe, you know, mass multi-entering 10% of him, something like that.
Yeah, and I like that you mentioned Godwin as well, because I put him in my article as well. I think he was only targeted 4 times, or he only had 4 receptions. But my one comment, because I kind of put a quick little blurb about it, was he really looks like he belongs. So, like you were saying, if those opportunities increase, especially if they increase exponentially, you take a guy who looks really good in a small sample size, and you all of a sudden exponentially increase his opportunities. I agree. There's a ton of upside that he really did look. Like, even with Ryan Fitzpatrick, he looked like he's a legit player who just needs an opportunity. That was definitely an observation I had. I like to hear that you came up with the same thing.
Yeah, of those cheap receivers who I think are going to be highly owned, I feel the best about him. There's no question, especially if we're talking tournaments here. I feel better about him than Galladay, than Inunwa, than – I'm trying to think who else is going to be at least a bit chalky this week. But all the receivers in those tier, which I think you're going to need to use multiples – on DraftKings and most roster constructions, I feel best about him. I'm definitely going to have the most of him. And Corey Davis would be the other guy in that tier who I think is going to go way overlooked, because the Tennessee Titans offense last week looked horrible. I think Mariota hurt his elbow and lost feeling in the elbow. Supposedly he's feeling fine. And this Houston team, I mean, I want to like Deshaun Watson, but that offensive line is doing him no favors. So I wonder if this team is not going to, you know, rate nearly as highly as we thought in terms of time of possession this year. And Tennessee might dominate the time of possession here. Tajay Sharp's the wide receiver, too. They lost Delanie Walker. So I think a sneaky amount of volume will be going to Corey Davis this week. So, yeah, of those guys who were week one, you know, breakouts, I like Godwin the best. And even in that tier, like, I like Davis more, and I think he's going to be the lowest owned of all those guys we talked about.
Yeah, another thing about Watson was he looked sort of like a statue. Now, granted, the Patriots, usually their defensive style is to keep a quarterback in the pocket. So even if you're a running quarterback, the Patriots usually try to attack them so that they can't run. So it could have been a little bit matchup specific in general, the way the Patriots play. But there has been some speculation that maybe he's not 100% healthy. Maybe like Carson Wentz of Philadelphia, maybe he should have sat out a couple games in order to get fully 100% back. So maybe Watson doesn't have that mobility. That's definitely possible. Could be an impact on his play and maybe why he looked so awful. I mean, I thought he was overrated and his ADP in year leagues was crazy in my opinion. But I don't think he's that bad. And he really did look awful in week one. So maybe his price in DFS drops and then he becomes a value. But for now, I'm definitely a little bit concerned about that.
Yeah, right, I think he's a fine DFS play.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I think he's a fine DFS play this week. Everyone's going to be low on him, but that offensive line is really bad. It's going to be working against him every single week.
Yeah, and he's not priced high either. So even though he was drafted in yearly leagues high, DFS has made the adjustment, and he's dropped way down. So he's not an expensive quarterback either.
Yeah, I mean, his upside clearly exceeds his price point. I would like to get a healthy Will Fuller for him to stretch the field because Deshaun Watson was number one in big-time throws last year, according to Pro Football Focus. So he needs that guy to kind of stretch the field. So not all the focus is on Lamar Miller in the running game and obviously DeAndre Hopkins. If he can get that other weapon, all of a sudden I think he's going to have one of those breakout games when people have kind of given up on him because that line.
All right, let's get to the positions. And we're talking with Ricky Sanders at R. Sanders DFS from Daily Roto. He's going to help you earn your $1 million prize pool here. At the very least, hopefully he'll allow you to put you into the green and win some ducats over here. We're going to talk a little bit of week two here. Let's go position by position, the likes and the dislikes. Let's start at tight end, where I hate paying for tight ends. I hate them in yearly leagues. I hate paying for them in DFS. But you know more than I do. How are you approaching tight end in week two? Who do you like as far as values, and who do you not like based on price?
Yeah, I mean, George Kittle is the guy for us and for me. Detroit really has struggled to cover tight ends. I think it was towards the beginning of last year they had allowed like 20 touchdowns in an 18-game span against the position. You look at last week, and Nunwa was really playing that role out of the slot, but he's also playing some tight end in the middle of the field and gassing this team. George Kittle, to me, especially if there's no Marquise Goodwin, is going to get a solid percentage of the market share for targets, and he's only $3,800 on DraftKings. So that's the focus for me. Guys that I don't like, it's kind of difficult to identify. I think Jonnu Smith is going to have some ownership, but because Kittle is so close in price to me, there's a nightmare upside there. I don't think it's a scenario where Jono's just going to walk into that Delanie Walker role. I think some of the targets are going to get spread out elsewhere. I mean, Deion Lewis looked pretty excellent last week. Wouldn't be surprised if he took on more of the work. Wouldn't be surprised if Tajay Sharpe is more involved. Wouldn't be surprised if Corey Davis becomes the number one receiver. So I think I'm with you this week going cheap. I mean, Rob Gronkowski is going to be under-owned because I think a lot of people are going to go the same way. But if you are going cheap, I would avoid the guy who kind of popped up on the waiver wire this week. I'd go with George Kittle, who just he was second in air yards last week to Rob Gronkowski, and he has a great matchup, so there's no reason to overthink this.
Yeah, I like Kittle as well. I owned him in some leagues, picked him up as a free agent in others. I'm definitely on board there. Let's move to the wide receiver position. Who are some of the guys that you like based on price, and who are some of the guys who maybe are expensive? Who are the guys that are expensive that you're paying for anyway? And who are the guys that are expensive that you're fading?
I really can't imagine fading Antonio Brown this week. I mean, against Kansas City, who if Kendall Fuller is the matchup you're worried about, that's likely Juju Smith-Schuster coming out of the slot. So I don't think they're going to shadow. I mean, this team didn't really do a lot of it last week, which means Antonio Brown will be running free on the outside against these mediocre corners. And Antonio Brown without Le'Veon Bell in his career, over 13 targets, about 128 yards a game, 0.82 touchdowns, and over 9 receptions per game. So we actually have Michael Thomas is pretty close of a value to Antonio Brown. But for me, if you're spending up on one guy, it's all about Antonio Brown here. I think we already talked about the guy that I really don't like, which is Anunua, who I've identified I think is going to have a ton of ownership.
So that's pretty easy. I mean, we already pretty much covered that. In terms of other guys that are near the top, I mean, Julio Jones against Carolina, we've seen 300-yard games against their zone defense before. I think Brown and Thomas are going to be at the top. But Julio Jones, if there's one guy who I think can top those guys, it's going to be him. I mean, people are off Matt Ryan already. He did look like he was a little hobbled last week. But still, I have confidence in him finding his guy, Julio Jones. He might not be, you know, the end zone target, but against this defense, would not be shocked if he goes for a long one.
Are you concerned about Antonio Brown and James Conner in the same lineup since you were so high on Conner?
Nope. I would play both of them. In fact, I would add Ben Roethlisberger to those lineups, and I would be completely fine with both of them. I mean, Antonio Brown, especially on DraftKings, you get that 100-yard bonus. And I think this team is going to score a lot. I think a lot of Kansas City games are going to turn into shootouts as is. So I am completely fine with the full game stack here. We saw how bad their defense is. We saw how good Tyreek Hill is. Patrick Mahomes looks good. So I'm expecting a lot of Kansas City games to be very, very productive for fantasy football. I would want all of that game.
And as far as values at the wide receiver position, who do you like there?
I think we kind of already went over it. I mean, Randall Cobb, if we get Aaron Rodgers in as the guy who I think is kind of a differentiator who's going to be cheap. I mean, Corey Davis, I talked about, I think his volume is going to go up with Delanie Walker. I think Chris Godwin is the ceiling play there. And then I think Austin Pettis, if we don't get Marquise Goodwin, is kind of the guy who you have to keep an eye on, because I do think, you know, some of the volume goes to Kittle. But we also heard the coach say that he is going to have a significant role if there's no Goodwin, and Goodwin did not practice again today. So he's the guy who could kind of enter the cash game consideration if Goodwin, in fact, does sit. But we don't know that information yet.
And if the situation works out perfectly, are you fine with stacking Kittle and Pettis and even going with Jimmy G, or do you want to have one or the other, or how do you go about that?
Well, it depends. I mean, if you think Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be the guy who wins you a billion, you're talking, you know, 300 yards, three or four touchdowns, then I don't think Kittle's going to catch four touchdowns, which means there will be someone else involved, and Pettis is so cheap that either him or Garcon, you would think, would be the guy finding the end zone. So, yeah, I think I would double stack if I'm going Garoppolo.
All right. And the running back position. We talked about some of the guys you like. Who are a couple of maybe bargains? If you can't afford to go with Antonio Brown and Julio Jones and Michael Thomas and Connor, there's going to be someone
right.
Someone who's going to be affordable. Who at the RB position makes it affordable that allows you to afford some of those other guys?
Well, I definitely recommend going cheap at receiver too, and probably quarterback for cash games. But if you need to go cheap at running back, we're waiting on injuries. I mean, Rex Burkhead, if he's out, James White becomes basically a lock. There would just be so much opportunity there. I mean, Sony Michel's practicing, and Burkhead practiced yesterday, so I think it's going to work itself out to where we don't need to play White. But also, Devontae Freeman sat today, and Tevin Coleman is 5,300. So if he became, you know, the workhorse back there, that is your value. I mean, another guy that you probably just don't want to mess around with in terms of value, because you do want to spend up at least on one guy at the position this week. I don't know if you want to go all the way up to Kamara. I mean, we saw him get the full workload that we weren't sure he was going to get last week. Mike Gillisley, Jonathan Williams didn't really play the Mark Ingram role. It was Alvin Kamara show all day long, but he's 9,500. I'd rather spend on Antonio Brown, which means you're probably looking at the tier of Christian McCaffrey and Melvin Gordon. McCaffrey against an Atlanta team that's been atrocious against running backs in the passing game. Now they lose their best cover linebacker. And we're talking about a team that was 21st in DVOA against receiving backs last year and allowed the second most receiving yards to backs. So Christian McCaffrey, especially on DraftKings, people got burned by him last week, but I think you're going to see a huge PPR day from him. And then Melvin Gordon, I mean, this Buffalo Bills team starting Josh Allen, they were second to last in terms of time of possession last week. I don't see it getting any better. Their offensive line was pathetic. One guy graded inside the top 40 in their offensive line, according to Pro Football Focus. Josh Allen's a mess, I think. I don't think he's anything special. He was the worst of the quarterback prospects, in my opinion, that went early in this draft. There's not a ton of receivers. I mean, LeSean McCoy is kind of trapped behind that line. So I think they're going to get dominated in time in terms of time of possession. I think the Chargers should win this game. And if they're up late, you're going to see a lot of Melvin Gordon.
And I know you're a big Wisconsin fan, and you were a huge Melvin Gordon guy when he first came out of into the league. And I was a little more skeptical about Gordon when he came into the league, but I think now he's one of the most underappreciated guys out there. I mean, we see how good Todd Gurley was last year. I'm not saying Melvin Gordon is Todd Gurley, but he catches the ball a lot better than I think people give him credit for, and he's always been a touchdown monster. I mean, he's got a magnet for the end zone. He always scores a lot of touchdowns, regardless of what you think of him. He's a touchdown machine. The yards are always there in the rushing game, but then also the fact that he also catches passes. He's not a runner only. He is a really good passer. I see him as one of the most underrated running backs in fantasy, in my opinion. I'm not sure, and I'm not biased. Like I said, I originally didn't like Melvin Gordon, but I've come to really think that he's a stud.
Yeah, there's a narrative that he's not good, but the situation there is good. I mean, he's dealing with Austin Eckler, who is becoming kind of the team's Darren Sproles, who's going to take some work from him. There's no question, but he's on a good offense. I mean, the defense is bad, so again, they're another team that should be playing in a ton of shootouts. That should be competitive. So I think, you know, you can typically project close to a full workload for him. And you mentioned he catches passes too. So I'm with you. I mean, mediocre skill set or not, however you feel about him, the workload, the quality of the workload, and the fact that he's getting the end zone touches too, makes him really interesting.
Yeah, I actually think the skill set's a little better. I'm not saying that he's a high-end stud workload skill set. He's not Le'Veon Bell. He's not even Todd Gurley, but I think the skill set's a little better than people give him credit for. I think he gets knocked a lot. Quarterback position, and then we'll get you out of here. I'm a greedy bastard. I'm more than happy to admit that. I love to go out and pay nothing for a quarterback and get a Ryan Fitzpatrick 5-touchdown game. But over the years, I've come to learn that when you get greedy and you go for that cheapie, granted, it's great when it happens. Ryan Fitzpatrick owners last week in DFS, I'm sure, were grinning all the way to the bank. But the percentages are still low. If you spend money on Ryan Fitzpatrick 10 times, he's going to fail you at least 9, if not all 10. So it's not a very good percentage play, but I just love to be able to find that. I mean, Joe Flacco costs almost nothing. It's great to go out there and get 3 or 4 touchdowns from Joe Flacco, who I think actually sucks, but at a cheap price, if you can somehow spend it everywhere else and then get him, you know, you fall in love. But I'm not so sure that's the way you should go about doing things. A higher percentage is something that you should probably be looking at a little bit more. How do you approach the quarterback position in general, and specifically in week 2? Who do you like and who are you fading?
I mean, for cash games, normally I don't like to spend up because the range of outcomes for quarterbacks is so much more condensed than it is for running backs. I mean, unless you've got a Cam Newton running for like 3 touchdowns, it's usually we're talking between a range of outcomes from like 12 to 30-ish fantasy points, where wide receivers, I mean, they could do nothing or we saw Tyreek Hill go for close to 50 fantasy points last week. So there is a huge range of outcomes for receivers and even running backs for that matter. So for the most part, I like to try and find the best per dollar options. This week, there's not really that guy because you're going with Matt Ryan, who you got to take a leap of faith on. He's 5,700 on DraftKings. Blake Bortles against New England playing from behind. He's, you know, hashtag not good. So you're really relying on a guy who, I mean, he will run a little bit, but his receiving core, I mean, that's decimated a bit. He's tough to rely on. Tyrod Taylor, I mean, there's always the threat now. He didn't play a great game last week that he could get benched. I mean, New Orleans defense looked really bad last week, but I think there's a decent shot that we see some positive regression from them and they come out looking like the defense we saw last year after a bad game. So cheap quarterback this week is not easy if you're going with a cash game construction. I think, you know, Drew Brees and Ben Roethlisberger are by far the top investments at the position. Drew Brees at home against Cleveland, who, I mean, Roethlisberger on the road last week wasn't great, but Drew Brees, I mean, we've seen the way the Saints offense looked, even in a game that they lost horribly because of the defense last week, they put up 40 points. So it's not like they were dead. And Ben Roethlisberger, we've been over that stack a million times here. I would be really shocked if this game does not turn into a shootout. Both teams doesn't have more than like 24 points when it's all said and done. I wouldn't be shocked if we're talking about an even higher scoring game. So if I can get Ben Roethlisberger, he is by far the safest investment to me of the week. I think he'll be finding a lot of Antonio Brown. I think, Kansas City defense will open up the seas for him. It's just tough to imagine that Ben Roethlisberger isn't a top 5 fantasy quarterback this week if he stays healthy.
And that's a question. Are you concerned at all about the elbow, or is that something where you're waiting until Saturday and Sunday comes along to maybe reevaluate?
Yeah, I'm going to reevaluate it. As of now, it's not that concerning to me. As long as he's playing in this matchup, I think I feel good about him. You get Ben Roethlisberger at home against a bad defense, so I think I'm willing to overlook that stuff. But if you're not, I mean, Drew Brees and even Jimmy Garoppolo against Detroit, we've talked about some of his pass catchers. I think you'd prefer Garoppolo if Goodwin plays. But even if he doesn't, I think he'll find a whole bunch of Kittle. I mean, he's got Breida as a receiving back. He's got Pettis, who's a talented, you know, young player. He's got Pierre Garçon, who's kind of a possession guy who he can rely on. It's a very good offense and a very good spot as well, if you really are worried about Roethlisberger, which I am not.
I'm seeing, again, I'm glancing at my fantasy draft account here, and Jared Goff is priced ahead of Phillip Rivers and Cam Newton. That surprised me a little bit. I don't know how he is in DraftKings or whatever, but should Jared Goff be priced as a top five QB, and would you be running from that?
We have him as a poor, poor value this week. We have him as basically being mispriced. We are not incredibly high on him.
No, mispriced. That's why I was, you know, I'm glancing all these different things, and I'm picking the things that pop out at me. And mispriced was almost glowing in bright red. It does. Phillip Rivers coming off a monster week, and he's going against the Buffalo team that was just one of the biggest disasters of the week, and yet he's cheaper than Jared Goff. I'm like, is there a typo or something there? Mispriced is a good. You were being kind in saying mispriced. I think you're looking and saying, who the hell is doing this? I get you. Last question, we'll get you out of here. I love the double whammy. I think everybody loves the double whammy. I think everyone assumes you have to go with the double whammy, but let me just get that confirmation from you. Are you always stacking a receiver or a tight end or maybe a running back who catches the ball with your starting quarterback when you're building lineups, or are there circumstances where you don't?
I would say the circumstances where you don't are your running quarterback. If you expect Cam Newton, to go for, 60 rushing yards and 2 touchdowns, and maybe just throw for 1. Like, I don't think you necessarily need the guy who's catching the ball if you're only going to get 1 touchdown but going to get an outlier performance that way. Another guy is Dak Prescott, who could do something like that. But if you're thinking that the way a quarterback's going to win you $1 million, someone like Ben Roethlisberger, someone like Tom Brady, you need to have pass catchers, because if they're going to have a great performance like you think, which is, you know, usually 350-plus yards, 3 or 4 touchdowns at the bare minimum for you to be in contention for winning all that money, someone's got to be doing the pass catching. And if he's going for that many yards and that many scores, you need one of the pass catchers. So, yeah, I mean, you could get creative. There are weeks where, you know, guys throw to running backs and they break a long one, so you could go, you know, like a quarterback and receiving back. But you do need a pass catcher if you're trying to win a tournament. There's no question.
We're talking with Daily Roto's Ricky Sanders at rsandersdfs. Ricky, tell everybody where they can find you, what you should be doing, things you're doing in the foreseeable future, and then we'll get you the heck out of here.
Yeah, at rsandersdfs on Twitter, always retweeting jokes. That's kind of my thing. But if you want to find my stuff on Daily Roto, I'm doing a lot of baseball right now. I'm writing an article every week reviewing lineups for the winners on both of the major sites. So, like, I reviewed the $1 million lineups last week, how they worked, you know, how you could have gotten there, et cetera. And also doing a tournament article, which comes out on Friday. So I'll be working on that one tonight, giving you plays that our model necessarily isn't overly high on, but showing you how to adjust our model so that you can get those guys in a ton of lineups if you're building them, and how you can kind of be different from the Daily Roto community. So that's most of my responsibilities right now at Daily Roto. It keeps me busy. And again, at rsandersdfs on Twitter.
Now, are the Daily Roto people over there using some sanity in putting a kibosh on the puns, or are you still going all pun crazy?
Oh, no, we're still going pun crazy. I don't know if you caught yesterday's, but I used a dodgeball reference. Yeah.
Oh, God.
We are
trouble.
Yeah, we are still full bore on the puns. I don't think that's ever going to die. For all our articles, baseball and football, yesterday's was dodge, duck, dip, dive, and Dodgers, and that was all me. You can bet on that.
That is trouble. Don't hold it against him that he's a pun warrior. I'm a huge Sports Night TV show guy, and I remember one specific Sports Night episode was the lead actor's one's biggest quip was, "I need my old producer back because this producer has puns in blocks 3, 7, and 9. That's you. You are the pun boy, and it's disturbing not only that you love the pun, but that you've been doing it for so long. It's like you've become more – it's almost like a fetish.
Yeah, I've probably done multiple thousand puns at this point across three sports. I think I've been doing it since back in my fantasy draft days, started maybe 3 years ago. So, yeah, we're talking thousands and thousands of puns. I can buy what you're selling.
But the fact of the matter is, and we've learned this about America more in this day and age than ever before, if you make us money, you can do whatever the hell you want, however the way you want to do it, as long as you make us the money. So pun all you want as long as you're successful. If you start failing, then you better start using proper English.
Fair enough.
All right, that's, again, Ricky Sanders from Daily Roto. If you're not a member, I'm going to ask either try to squeeze a free membership out of Daily Roto from Ricky, or I'm going to go out and pay for it myself because I need thousands of dollars and I need European trips. I've been to China on occasion, so that will be an interesting trip for you. So congratulations on that one. I won't hold it against you, at least publicly, that you're not inviting me. But enjoy that flight. Don't get stuck in the front row in the middle. I flew back from China 18 hours in a front row middle seat while watching Kiefer Sutherland's father in an English movie, in an American movie that was subtitled to China, that was, you know, they had the voiceovers in Chinese. So I was watching Kiefer Sutherland's father in an old school movie where he actually got naked, adjusting his English to Chinese. So I had to read his lips to understand what he was saying if I wanted to pay attention, which means I had to focus in on him, and he was actually naked in some occasion. So that was my Chinese story. I'm sticking with it, but congratulations. And just so you know, if they provide the seafood or the steak, you're going to get the seafood because the Chinese on those air flights all love steak. So I thought I was going to get the steak. I ended up with the shrimp, which was not even edible.
I'm planning to load up on the melatonin, so I'm hoping I sleep through at least 10 hours of it, and then I only got to put up with the other 8, which is basically a trip to California, which is how I'm mentally preparing for it.
I flew on the way first class. I got a free upgrade. It was phenomenal. It was one of the best plane flights I've ever had. My brother and I went over there. On the way there, it's a shorter flight on the way than it was on the way back. First class was phenomenal. Free candies, sodas, everything you could have for the whole time, as comfortable as you could be. Ride back was coach, front row. As I said, the movie experience, it was miserable. It was just downright miserable. So hopefully you'll get the latter rather than the former, and then I can ask you about it. But that's my wish to you and your fiancé there.
Not fiancé yet, but yes, thank you. We appreciate it.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to put the pressure on you. She didn't call me to tell me to push you in any way. I will admit that. I do not know her, and I will not contact her, I promise, under either my real name or any of the fake ones.
No, it's okay. You just sound like my mother.
All right, that's Ricky Sanders. I've kept him too long. We got to get him out of here. I could joke and give him a hard time all forever, but we'll let you guys go. Thanks a lot for putting in the time. Hopefully we'll have you back in future weeks. I'm going to use a lot of your suggestions, if not every single one of them. So if I win the money, I'm still not giving you any.
That's okay. That's the life we've chosen here. I just hope you do win money and everyone out there does. And good luck this week.
Oh, I'm going to need it. I'm going to need it. Ricky Sanders from Daily Roto. Again, follow him on Twitter at R. Sanders DFS. Hopefully you listen to the podcast, but at the very least, hopefully you win the money. Thanks everybody for tuning in today. That's our Roto Experts Fantasy Sports Show for week number 2. Good luck, everybody.